The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
Have you heard Spike's Car Radio? It's comedian, actor, writer Spike Ferriston sitting on the porch in Malibu talking with some cool people about cool cars and life in general.
My first guest is Jerry Seinfeld. He's right here. He was all right. Don't try to hug him.
Chris Hardwick.
I could feel everything on the road. I mean, it was basically like, it was like unprotected sex for driving.
Jeremy Piven.
You know what? I think you and Jerry are spiritually tied to cars, and I respect it and I love it, but I don't quite get it yet, but I want to get it.
Download new episodes of Spike's Car Radio every Wednesday on the Podcast One app, or save time and subscribe now at Apple Podcasts or at PodcastOne.com.
Put your name on it. Just put your name on it. That's all I say. Be a man or a woman. Put your name on it.
Well, I'd like to hear about it, pothead.
Look at the game change. If you want to battle, it's either
that you will or you won't. Hey, you know, you're not a bad looking man, Mr. Gals.
But you are, Blanche. You are in that chair.
No, I thought you said that you are right, Spider.
Hey, man.
More stories. Spike Ferriston. Is that like did they put the accent on the right syllable?
That was really good. Ferriston? I usually say Ferris like wheel, 10 like the number.
Well, yeah.
Ferriston. But it's an anglicized Jewish name, I believe, somewhere down the line. I think it's my grandfather. His name was Fernstein. And he married this Irish girl. And then I guess that was a big deal. So he anglicized the name. But he didn't really go far enough.
Not like Ellis Island.
He changed it. He decided to go, you know what? We'll make ourselves less Jewy if we're just Ferriston. And then he had my dad baptized Catholic. So that's really a lot less Jewy.
Things we do for love. Spike has a great new podcast, Spike's Car Radio. That's Podcast One. Podcast One is... I got the app on my phone, and I was flying back and forth to Kentucky, and I'm just like, every podcast I want to listen to, they house the podcast, mm-hmm. and I was just like, politics, religion, ghosts, literally, like, everything's in there.
Right.
I'm like, this is insane. They've just got...
They said they do 200, but not one more, not a podcast more or less. It's always 200.
Really?
That's what they said. I don't know. You've been here longer than I have. I don't know what's going on.
You were here last week, and my man was supposed to record. Corey's here, of course. FryFry42 on Twitter. Spike's on Twitter, at Spike Ferriston. FERRESTEN. Spike is Spike. And at JMore37. And my engineer just was, you know, about an hour late. You came in and said, how long is it? You were very kind. And... I had so much to ask you, like writing for Dennis Miller and Weekend Update, mm-hmm. Saturday Night Live stories, your podcast, how much you write, your volume, your catalog, how to write for a specific person. And you said, because I got to go pick up Jerry Seinfeld at the airport at, it was like an hour and 15 minutes after the fact. And mm-hmm. I went, no one's ever, you know, you said Jerry, actually, I said Jerry Seinfeld for the listener. Did you ever think this would be your life growing up? Like, how long is this podcast? Because I got to go pick up Seinfeld at the airport.
I had to go meet him. Jerry, I didn't have to pick him up.
Why doesn't he just have a car service?
It was Santa Monica Airport, and he was doing some gig for Netflix, and we were meeting there and then going for a drive out to Malibu. So I was just off to meet him.
And then did you record him?
I recorded him the next morning. No, that night we just went for a drive. We had a little food on the porch and then went off to the Dodger game with George Shapiro as manager.
I love George.
And Chuck Martin, a funny comedian. And it was a great night.
The Lost Beetle.
He's the Lost Beetle.
Oh, that's George. I'm sorry. Dodger game.
It was good.
It's such a beautiful stadium. Mm-hmm. And we have such a reputation for being like the most relaxed fans. And lately, it seems like LA fans have become the biggest fucking crybabies. Like, I can't believe you pulled Clayton Kershaw after 95 pitches. Like, well, one more inning will be 110. So 15 pitches, you're happy? Like, what
They're starting to care. That's caring. They're starting to care about the team and the games.
It just rubs me the wrong way.
Why? I mean, where did you grow up?
Because New Jersey.
All right, so Yankees. Massachusetts, so I'm Boston fans, New York fans.
So if Pedro Martinez got pulled in early June after 95 pitches, you're going to have to yank him off of the mound physically because he's never going to want to come out. Because in October, you want him to be, you know, cool. And Clayton Kershaw gets the shit kicked out of him by, like, the Cardinals every year at Busch.
Right.
You know, so
I'm talking about something different, though. I know when I first moved to Los Angeles 20 years ago, I went to Dodger Stadium and there were no fans there. And it was only the fans of the opposing team. Like, I would sit with my fellow Red Sox fans.
Wait, when?
We owned the stadium.
That's impossible.
There were zero Dodger fans.
In what year?
I guess 95.
You had five rookies of the year in a row.
I'm exaggerating. But my point is this.
I exaggerate to clarify.
In general, the fans... From where I was, the fans did not care as much as my Boston fans or my New York fans. They just didn't. They weren't hooked into the game as much. Maybe I'm completely wrong here, but it seems the last couple of years now, they do care. And it's nice that they're upset about things. And the Dodgers played really well the night I saw them.
Well, they won the game. My whole point was, it was 95 pitches. Dave Roberts took him out. The next guy hit a triple off the reliever, and you go, here we go again. But then they won the game, and he's got 15 pitches in the cannon for
that's right,
for down the line. So you were an intern at Saturday, not an intern, a PA intern?
I was an intern.
At Saturday Night Live?
Yeah, yeah.
And from there, you worked your way up. I mean, and I know the structure of the building, it's difficult to do. It's a funhouse mirror every step of the way, where you're writing Weekend Update with Dennis Miller.
Right. Well, not with. I didn't really sit with Dennis, but that...
Who has?
I remember... that his door was always open, and, you know, I had nothing to do. I didn't know anybody in New York, and when I was done doing my intern stuff, I would go home and just go through newspapers and write jokes and pick my 5 or 10 best and give them to Dennis. And, you know, for the entire season, he didn't use any of them, but on that very last night of the last show of that season, he did a joke of mine, an Oliver North joke that somehow involved... Disney's new currency, Disney dollars. I have no idea what the joke was. But
there's no way you don't know that joke.
I don't know it. I'd have to go back and look it up. But it was on TV. That's what I know. It was on TV. And when that happened, it was what I imagine smoking crack is like. I was hooked. I could not believe I had written something that Dennis Miller did on Saturday Night Live, the show I grew up watching. You think you're going to Google that joke right now. I love it.
I got Jackie Robbins Jr. $100,000 jackpot wad script once.
Yeah.
I can't get it on
video.
You're
not going to find it. I have it somewhere in a binder in storage somewhere, and nobody cares. It wasn't that good of a joke.
I have the joke right in front of me.
You do? Come on.
I have the whole Weekend Update right in front of me.
Wow. How did you find it?
Dana Carvey came on as Jimmy Stewart. Thank you. Good evening. And what can I tell you? Gary and Lee Hart have announced blah blah blah. So, like, first of all, to the listener, I know you guys love Saturday Night Live stories, as you should, because I don't know, it's like Camelot. It's it's that, like, wait, what happened? You guys just, except we don't die skiing. But the fact, like, Dennis is like the mystery. And people don't realize, especially people younger than us, that they just know him as this guy that goes to Fox Sports, and he's got a gray beard and glasses, and he's this right-wing comedian that does political stuff. The single most influential comedian of my life was the Off-White album, Dennis Miller.
Wow.
Because, what's with this kabuki shit, Twyla? Not right. The Momoshans get a limbo stick. I knew what a limbo stick was. I heard a kabuki. Who's Twyla?
I looked up Kabuki when...
And Twyla thought, and I went, oh, it's okay to have 30% of the audience get it.
Right.
As long as it's not at the destruction of the 70% that are there for right down the middle. And that was like balls. And you got a bomb a long time.
I used to trust his references. He's thought about this very carefully. And even if I don't understand it, I know that's funny because he thought about it. But I did the same thing. There should be a little translator app for him going through his routine. He's so good at it.
You know, Disneyland now has its own currency, Disney dollars, signed by Scrooge McDuck and usable as legal tender. However, there was panic in Anaheim this week when 10 million Disney dollars mysteriously disappeared. Fears were soon calmed, though, when it was learned the money had been misplaced by Goofy and the Magic Kingdom CPA.
Right.
That's not Oliver North.
And that was Oliver North. I'm pretty sure.
Goofy, comma, the magic. So Goofy's the Magic Kingdom.
So, yeah, and then the key would come up. Oliver North came up.
It was a photo of
Oliver North
when he said Goofy.
Right. Because wasn't there an Oliver North scandal going on at the time?
Who can remember?
I do. I remember it. And so the key, that was the, boy, by the way, a long joke for Weekend Update, right?
Very.
Very long. Right.
And we're not shitting on the joke or Weekend Update.
You can. It's fine. But
no, we.
But I think jokes were kind of that long back then. They weren't as quick.
Here's the quick ones. You know, in retrospect, it's a shame Gary Hart had to drop out of the campaign because while I never saw it before, for a while there last week, he really did remind me of Jack Kennedy.
There you go.
Because he was fucking somebody on the boat.
Yeah.
When you submit jokes to Weekend Update, Herb Sargent was there, right?
Yeah. Now, remember, I'm not submitting. I'm just taking some pieces of paper and handing them to Dennis Miller and go, you want to have a look at these? And he would go, sure. And it's funny you mentioned Herb Sargent because I was just thinking about him the other day. You know, it's I worked pretty hard as an intern and didn't immediately start turning in jokes because I didn't want to be that guy, but I also didn't want to blow the opportunity. But there was one day, and it was when I was already a receptionist, where I had a couple pages of jokes. And Dennis was doing my jokes regularly, and I know Herb was a little upset about it because I wasn't in the Writers Guild. You know, I was in the Receptionist Guild.
Is there one?
No, there is not.
There should be.
No, there should. There absolutely should. And I knocked on the door while he was, they were going over the final rundown for Weekend Update on a Friday, and opened it to give my jokes, and Herb screamed, "Not now!" Herb Sargent.
Herb Sargent, for the listener, is a Tip O'Neill.
Yeah.
A white haired, older guy that you're like, how have you, not to the detriment of his talent, but just how, like Bob Van Rye, how have you just been here
He's been there forever. And I really admired him. He was one of my writing heroes. And I stupidly picked, you know, my timing was way off. And he screamed at me, "Not now." And Dennis said, "Just come back later, kid."
And did you?
Of course.
Herb Sargent didn't like me at all.
He did not like me, apparently.
Not now.
But I screwed up. It's really not fair to Herb. Herb's
you opened the door to do something that they were doing.
The door might have been open. I don't know. But I was interrupting their meeting. And I know now if that were happening when I was doing it, I'd probably yell too. Not now. But
I guess it depends on the joke. If it was a Disney joke. Dollars joke, not
but
now.
I was delivering. Yeah, I was doing much better than the Disney Dollars for North joke. I was getting sometimes up to 5 jokes in a Weekend Update.
That's that doesn't sound like a lot to a guy sitting on the subway
right now.
Considering there's how many jokes in Weekend Update?
Oh God,
around
15, maybe 20.
Yeah, that's insane.
Maybe. Yeah, that was one of my best days. That was my record. In general, it was 1 or 2. And it ended up being the same even for, like, Dave's monologue. If you could get
Letterman, you wrote four.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
If you could get maybe, I remember we would crunch this as writers on Letterman. Like, if you submitted 25 jokes for monologue that day or for top 10, if you got 2 out of 25 on, huge. That was the best you could probably do.
How many guys on that staff?
Probably like 13.
Great, if you want.
I bet Gerard Mulligan, too, was probably maybe hitting a little better than that. But for the rest of us, that was really good.
I want to get to put a pin in Letterman and make sure I get to it. And you going from receptionist to actually being the guy that Dennis Miller relies on. Dennis has always been, and I told you, the most influential. Now Carlin is with the elasticity of time. And
but I don't think he ever relied on me. I was just somebody who wrote
jokes. He could rely on you. And he knew when you handed him something, it wasn't like Jim Downey.
Yes, no,
he
took it seriously.
Right.
He definitely took it seriously.
And he's not a guy that's not his wheelhouse.
Right.
Right, he's pretty, my words, a little perennially skeptical and dubious has been my experience.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to the point where you have 5 jokes on Weekend Update, and people don't realize Dennis was a rock star.
Right.
Like when you talk about the SNLs, like the Chris Farleys, and like Phil Hartman was the glue, and you go all the way back to Eddie Murphy, and you go all the way back to the originals, obviously. But Dennis that was after like Brad Hall. That was after another guy gave it a shot. Somebody else did it, and it was awful. And then Dennis came. He's got like the cool long hair. He's coming into like fucking Sympathy for the Devil was the music instead of G.E. Smith and the Band. Good evening, and what can I tell you? And he was like a good-looking dude.
Yeah.
And at the end, and that's the news, and he would start doing the scribble and
yeah,
do it
that's
off
right.
the side.
That's right.
And you're like, he was a star.
Yeah, for sure.
And then he was in that movie with Donald Sutherland, Michael Douglas, maybe. And he goes, you know, something about losing $1 billion, get stuck. He points to his eyeball, just get stuck right here. Like, he got these good little movie roles, but people don't know he started as a prop comic.
I don't remember that.
He was a prop comic in Pittsburgh.
He was?
Yes.
Doing
he
what?
Was on
Do
Star
you remember
Search.
Any of those jokes?
No, but he was on Star Search as a prop comic.
Wow.
And one day a comic was driving him home from a gig, and he goes, let me get my stuff out of the trunk. And they're on, you know, Pittsburgh's very hilly. And Dennis goes, so I'll talk. And all of a sudden, a fucking tire, like some Firestone, just goes rolling down the street. And Dennis goes, Jesus Christ, did you fucking see that tire? And the driver with the other comic goes, yeah, holy shit. And they're looking up the hill. Like a month later, the guy gets a flat. It was his spare. That was Dennis's like greatest joke on earth. Like, did you fucking see that tire, man? Like, that's hilarious.
Yeah, that's
not if you're
great.
The guy that needs the spare. Letterman, the anti-monologue is like how it sort of got painted.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I can't imagine him or any of you guys signing off on like that's what we're doing. The anti-monologue.
What do you mean? Because well, I used to categorize it like this because, you know, I used to go to, when I was in college, that was the only show I watched on television. And I liked it because it was so anti-comedy. It was different than anything I'd ever seen, and this guy didn't seem to care.
But it was funny.
It was really funny to me when the audience didn't get what he was doing.
But they didn't get it because it wasn't funny. They didn't get it because they came in from Madison, Wisconsin. And then, in my opinion, they didn't...
Well, he was doing things like, you know, he would take the entire Act 1 and start drilling his desk so that his mic wire went through the hole. Right. And he would do it in real time.
Yeah.
And the audience would be like, what kind of show is this? And go, you know, Paul, play a little music for me. All
Paul,
of this
you
stuff-
mean drilling music, Paul? How are we doing on time, Morty?
Yeah, all of that stuff.
Three of us are laughing.
Yeah, and I had never seen it.
It's funny.
Because he's doing an anti-show at the time. Now that seems pretty commonplace, if not even a little old, but that's what I loved about it. So when I, you know, had a chance to write for Dave's monologue, I only wanted to do jokes like that, that were not based in any headlines whatsoever, that were just, you know, you know what I did today? I put a pancake in my CD player. Yep, that's what I did. And I said, and I hit play, and for one brief shining moment, I heard Aunt Jemima singing. You know, those are the types of jokes.
Yeah,
you didn't
fun.
Laugh at that one. But
no, I mean,
but I loved that stuff.
You know why? Because the first thing I thought was you couldn't do that joke today because Aunt Jemima, the network, would go, it's insensitive. Seriously, that's what went through my head. But that
right,
is funny.
Right, well, it was because of the syrup, but you're right.
And he would take a minute and a half to say what you just said in
right.
11 seconds.
Yes.
But anti-monologue, you were still writing to make something funny.
Right.
But anti-monologue, as a comic, when you hear it, it's like, no, we're not. We're trying not to be funny. You right. want to be counterculture, but you mm-hmm. never want to be counter-comedy.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be counter-status quo, I would say.
Right, right.
So I think it got a bad label. And even you just defended it.
Right.
But I'm like, but what you're saying is you guys tried to write funny.
Maybe, or odd, or satisfying. Steve O'Donnell was the head writer at that time, had a great way of putting it. It was like, it can't just be weird for the sake of being weird. It has to be oddly satisfying. You have to feel satisfied after you see it. So I remember, you know, a thing, a viewer mail letter that they did before I was there that really entertained me was Life Without the Constitution. Can you imagine, Paul, what life would be without the Constitution? No, I can't, Dave. What would life be like without the Constitution? And then there's a gliss. And then they gliss to a pre-tape of Dave tied to a stake, a wooden stake with ropes. And there's a giant rat in purple satin gown whipping him to some strange music. And you just see that for about 20 seconds. And then glisses out back to Dave and Paul. Like that,
I
love that.
I think it's hilarious.
Yeah, it's really funny. It made no sense. The audience was confused in the studio. What was that? What were we doing, Paul?
I think we should point out, though, a studio audience for a sitcom or for a talk show
mm-hmm.
have no fucking idea where they're going.
Well, nowadays, especially.
For the right. most, you go to Santa Monica Pier and you go, You like Will and... I don't know any sitcoms. You like Big Bang Theory? And they're like, yeah. You want to go to a sitcom taping? And they go, yeah. And they go, please welcome the pilot, a finger, my nose, Bush.
I think like, they're, oh, and they're wow. paid these days. A lot of them are paid.
I've heard they're paid like extras. I know there's a lot of military and a lot of people that are entirely too young to be there.
Right.
And they're all wearing Raiders jerseys.
Well, I heard, and maybe this isn't true, but at the time I was doing my late night show on Fox, I said, why are the prettier people up front? And they said they get paid more. So there was some judgment being made by the audience wrangler to pay the nicer looking people and put them up front. They made more money. You might make 25, while I might only make 10 bucks.
So I guess they actually do get paid.
I guess. No, I'm not lying. Sure.
No, I know you're not lying.
In the beginning of any show that doesn't really have a fan base,
Corey, you've done this actual job at some point. Do you know, I mean, what's the going rate to have an audience sit like in Gary Unmarried? They didn't get paid.
30 to 50 bucks.
Those fucking people got paid?
Really?
I don't think so.
We just
but
you just
30 to 50 bucks. They got paid? I don't think so.
There's filler audiences that you
yes.
do pay.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, if the show has enough stars, then it'll
that's
it'll
true, right,
out.
Right. So in my late night show in that first year, nobody knew who I was, and pretty much still doesn't. And also they didn't know the show, and a lot of times they didn't know the guests. So we'd have people right out of rehab that needed a little extra cash, Marines sometimes. And then
rehab
as the show
Marines.
Moved on, it was easier to get folks to show up. Yeah. You know, but
you wrote the Soup Nazi episode of Seinfeld, so. I was going to go the whole time without mentioning it, but they out there they want to hear about it. So, mm-hmm. First of all, there's like three different people that go, I'm the soup Nazi. There's that one guy that looks like Kramer in Manhattan. Like, he's the soup Nazi. There's an actual
that's
soup
the real,
Nazi
That's
place.
The real Kramer, though, right?
Right, I guess.
He's my Facebook friend. I'm very proud of that. But he is not the soup Nazi.
But he's definitely not the real Kramer, because I don't think that guy hung out with
No, he is the real Kramer. He hung out with Larry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he is.
Soup Nazi. There's a hole in the wall on the west side. I'm going to guess about
55 and 8th.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Okay, I'm
yes.
in the ballpark. And it's a hole in the wall.
Yeah.
I've never seen it open.
No.
Because I'm always going through there after a gig or something.
It might not be open. I think he just filed for bankruptcy, but...
And you went there. Like, how... What was the... This is maybe one of the... Aside from, like, who can go the longest without masturbating, which was,
that's
like,
my favorite episode, the contest.
Weeks long.
I like that one. Right.
Discussions.
Yes.
I remember being on a fast-pitch softball team in Panorama City, and guys in Spanish... We're like no, like I couldn't go one day, man. But in Spanish, like waving, like no, under their necks, like forget it, like. So Soup Nazi, like, were you already on staff? Is that something you had in your pocket when you arrived?
No, the episode is my experience when I was a writer at Letterman, because he was a few blocks away at the Ed Sullivan Theater, and that's where we went to lunch frequently in the middle of winter. The Soup Nazi was only there in the colder months, and you know,
bankrupt.
A lot of the scenes are. Documentary almost, you know. I was introduced to this guy one day by Dave Hansen, another writer, who said, you know, there's just one thing. You're going to love this soup, by the way. And, you know, if you do this right, you're going to get a little bread and maybe a little fruit. And if he really likes you, you might get the chocolate. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? I just want a bowl of soup. And he goes, trust me, you got to do it the right way or you're not going to get it. And we walk down to this place, and I see all these people moving and handing their money and stepping to the left. And I didn't do that. I just said, give me some of the mulligatawny. And he looked up, and he made eye contact, and he said, get out of here. No soup. And I said, what? He goes, no soup. No soup. Everybody else looked away. Nobody even looked at me. I was an outcast in this little group. And when I, you know.
It's a tiny place.
It's a tiny place. But the guy didn't take my money, $7 for a bowl of soup. I was completely bewildered.
You sounded exactly like Jerry.
It's
a tiny place, but the guy didn't even take my $7.
That happens when you write for someone for a long time.
Yeah.
I was Letterman for a long time. I wrote a pilot for Louie. I became Louie. Now I've got Jerry. He was the last guy I kind of wrote for that way. So, but anyways, this guy, I said to David, I said, what the hell? And he said, I told you. You got to hold your money out. You've got to say the name of your soup. No extraneous conversation. You got to step to the left, and then you'll get your soup. And I said, who is this guy? And he goes, they call him the Soup Nazi. And it, you know, it was this kind of writer's room
and you
joke.
Said,
this
never
guy.
Never again.
No, I immediately fell into lockstep and said, I want... The soup was so good. He let me try his soup, and it was so good that I went... You know, just I think as human beings, we like rules. You know, yeah. This is going to be the soup rules. And I was very entertained that he did this and that I get yelled at and he took this. You know, you immediately respect him for that, right? Someone will get in your face like that and say, I'm not going to give you soup for $7.
Yeah.
I deserve that. And
did you have to go back in like a disguise?
No, he didn't remember. That's what we tested the next time.
Turns out, it sounds just like he was autistic.
He never looked...
No soup for you.
No, he didn't look down. He didn't look down. But if you yelled at him, if I chose to get in his face, he would not have let me back. That would have been the end of it.
And what nationality around-ish?
Middle
world?
Eastern kind. I don't know.
No soup for you. I mean, one of the most famous, iconic
Al
lines.
Yagana is his name. And he Al Yagana.
Al Yagana.
And he's a genius... soup guy, and he used to, at least what I heard, was in the summer he would travel the world looking for new recipes and then bring them back to New York in the fall, and we would have African peanut butter soup and all sorts of things. I don't know if that was all bullshit.
No, I think it's true because the soup you just said I never heard of.
Right.
What did you order?
I like the crab bisque.
No, you said I'll have
African peanut butter.
When you got rejected, you ordered something.
I don't remember what I was just...
Said?
No. No, I just ordered
something
whatever...
I never heard of.
Whatever... Mulligatawny.
Yeah, what's that? Do you know what mulligatawny is?
It's all just so good. There was shrimp, chili. There were all sorts of
Anthony
amazing
Anthony Bourdain's
soups.
Got this whole thing like Bloods versus Crips, and that's a blood is somebody that uses what they have there. So,
right.
Like, if you live in the desert, it's just a lot of fucking, you know, armadillo and desert. I don't know. I picked the worst possible climate to have this discussion. If you live in Jersey, there's a lot of deer.
Right.
A lot of tomatoes and corn.
I see.
And if you're a Crip and you live in Jersey, you're like, well, we got this Chilean sea bass. Instead of getting fluke and bluefish out of the ocean, you go off premises and bring it back. So
he was
a Crip.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Crip. Nazi.
Yes.
Corey pulled up a bunch of photos. We'll throw that up at jmore.com where the Amazon thing lives. You got to get one of those.
The little Amazon click through?
Yeah. Unless you don't have one yet.
It's
simple. Corey could do it for you. It's easy. They go to jmore.com and where it says Amazon. If you want to go to Amazon, you go to my website and click through. It costs them nothing. It's an extra.
Should I have my own separate site other than the Podcast One site?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know why I said that like Ed McMahon. Yes.
I'm very new to this
separate
whole thing.
Separate sites, sir.
Separate sites, sir.
Yes.
That's where the money lives.
Individual, yes.
So people click on the Amazon after they're done listening to your show and they buy their toilet paper.
And yes. And Amazon wants to know how did you get to Amazon? And then Amazon
and pays you
me
a few rolls.
Like 2%.
Right.
And it goes direct deposit to my son's college.
Oh, wow. That's great.
It's really great. They tell me it's doing well, but I don't see it. But I'm hoping it's a full ride. Like my dream is minority scholarship at an all-black college. A white defensive end at like Georgia Southern named Meredith.
Dream.
A boy named Meredith. A white defensive end at, say, Grambling. You would fucking never miss SportsCenter. Like, there's one white guy. Look at this fucking guy. He's like Howie Long.
Yeah.
And then I could pocket all that money and buy a house in Hana.
Mm-hmm.
And ride around in all your cars on the island.
Sure.
Like Magnum P.I.
Absolutely.
Listen to this. TrueCar, TrueCar.com, 13,000 dealers, over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available. TrueCar app is what I use to get my truck. I put my name on it. You save on average over $3,000 off MSRP if you use the TrueCar app. Look, I got a nice truck. I don't know why it was important to me. I needed black rims. I wasn't going to move. 15 different trucks were like, here you go. Nope. And then my phone vibrated, and they go, hey, guess what we found for the price you wanted to pay? You could see what everybody else is paying for that same vehicle, save time, save money, never overpay. I'm telling you, TrueCar.com, and go to a TrueCar certified dealer, get the TrueCar app. That's what I got. Jeff Hanks writes, Dear JJ, I love the podcast, the new daily sports podcast. I appreciate that free content. It's weird to listen to sports talk and swearing. LeBron James bending Michael Jordan over a coffee table and fucking him. I laughed so hard I had to leave work and go home. I would have been fired because I would have shared it. Regardless, I am a brony, and I went to jmore.com, and then I went to Amazon by clicking through. And for my brony convention coming up in San Diego in August, I got all my brony needs. Thank you for the free content. I'm a warrior for life. #we. You'll never know how much we appreciate you, Jeff Hengst, Thousand Oaks, California. Brony.
Brony.
My Little Pony for dudes that love My Little Pony.
Yeah, don't use that.
I don't know what you buy
me,
for...
My agent called me Brohammer the other day, and I almost fired him.
That's, yes.
He said, hey, Brohammer. And I said, what?
It's the new thing I've noticed is the Danettes did it, like Dan Patrick's crew, who yes. are wonderful dudes. Uh-huh. Like, not a single negative thing, mm-hmm. any of them. The name Joe is like, what's up, Bro Namath? Hey, Bro Montana. Hey, right. Bro Montana.
Yeah.
And then you get caught up trying to outthink it, and they've been already doing it for yeah. 4 years.
That's right.
And you're going into like, you
now
know,
I call everybody Bro Hammer. I'm like, I've learned to love it.
Bro Franklin.
Oh. Huh?
I'm going into like,
my 7-year-old called me Bro Hammer the other day, and I said, that's right, bro.
So wait, this just happened, and already you got this whole sphere of influence.
With what? My kids?
No, your agent called you Brohammer the other day, and you almost
yeah,
fired
but
him.
But I like him. He's a good guy.
But then you said it to your son.
But then it became the joke with me and my business partner. You know what I mean? Whenever we see him, we're going to call him Brohammer. And then it became normalized. And now Brohammer is normalized. And now I don't know that I'm doing it. I might call you Brohammer soon.
Brohammer sounds like Mickey Spillane presents Brohammer.
I don't even know what it means. Brother Hammer?
It's
what?
Broham.
Broham.
Which is, I would assume, a play on the Cadillac Brougham, which is spelled Bro,
yeah, I guess.
G-H-A. I don't know. But like, what's up, Broham? Brohammer.
And then the E-R.
How about the fact a guy named Armand Hammer
right.
bought Arm & Hammer?
Really? They weren't related? That...
No. This is fascinating. You don't know this.
He's Googling again, ladies and gentlemen.
No, I just...
You can hear he's swivelly Googler.
I want to show
shoulders
you.
Go back and forth.
Usually,
when he Googles.
Do they really?
No.
They oh, haven't. I wish they did. Arm & Hammer, which is the... you know what it is.
I know what it is, yeah.
It's owned by...
And a guy named Arm & Hammer bought it.
Yeah.
He liked it so much.
He was born in 1898. Why shouldn't he? He owned a... All right, fuck. No, I'm throwing my fucking computer away. In the trash.
No.
No,
I was so impressed that you... I've been looking for that joke for about 15 years.
Arm & Hammer?
No, my Weekend Update joke. I need you... You got to bring that back, because I need to see where you found that. I'm no lie. I've been looking for it.
I literally went, Dennis Miller, Disney Dollars, Oliver North,
wow.
Enter.
Oh, my God.
But I still can't get video of Jackie Robbins Jr. $100,000 jackpot wad, which is one of my top 5 all-time sketches. Okay. You don't know what it is.
No. Have you tried the Saturday Night Live app?
No.
There's a little app that does have all the sketches on them, and it's pretty good.
You know what? My girlfriend has it, and because I'm like, I did a motivational speaker sketch, and it was all in Spanish.
Uh-huh.
And the only reason I was in it was because David Spade was at a model party and didn't want to leave the party because he was going to hook up. And he told Fred Wolf, he goes, just put Jay Moore in it. And so I sit there and I go, Senor Foley, where'd you learn your Spanish? Taco Bell? And he goes, muy cómico. Es el Paul Rodriguez, padre. Es el Paul Rodriguez. And it's one of the single greatest experiences of my life. Because not laughing with Chris Farley, mm-hmm. and between dress and air, it wasn't getting cut. Between dress and air, after all the notes were done, Lauren goes, and before we go, Jay, do you think you could maybe not laugh on live television? It's like when you see the space shuttle re-entering,
right.
and it's on fucking fire,
mm-hmm.
but the people inside are just like, all right, Houston, we're about 44 miles from the Indian Ocean. It's on fire. You're mm-hmm. losing panels. That's the outside of you.
Mm-hmm.
And the inside, it's crazy, because he would tussle your hair and make your wig crooked.
Right.
And he knew, you know this already. He knew when the camera was not on him, and then he would go cross-eyed while I'm talking to you, positive mental, and then snap back when the camera went to the two of you.
Yes.
You're powerless over the guy.
Yep.
So your Jackie Robbins Jr. jackpot wad was Martin Short, who was an albino, like Frank Sinatra Jr. if he was an albino. But he kind of had hair. I think it was like the Doug Henning wig. It was like long, white hair. And he had an overbite and a lisp, and it was, he spun a wheel, and he had Guest, and Christopher Guest was a gay detective. He was partnered with Sammy Davis Jr., played by Billy Crystal.
I don't remember this one.
So there's a guy in blackface.
Right.
Like, progressive. We were mm-hmm. always progressive, and now we're going back. Okay, here's a
Hot and Spite Rita Moreno. Let me finish the question. It's a pickle. I don't know. What is it? And he goes, you know what? Let's just pass. I don't know. I just did Dennis for fucking Sammy Davis. And then Jim Belushi was Captain Kangaroo. And Mary Gross was a civilian housewife. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the funniest sketches of all time. Like, okay, these are people. And they swing. Monkeys. They're people. Like, Captain Kangaroo loses his shit. And then Jackie Robbins Jr.'s Jackpot Wad. He does a big song.
Mm-hmm.
And that is in my top five. So I want to know from a guy that was a receptionist, handed in jokes to Weekend Update, and would nail five intermittently. I want to know your top five sketches, including film pieces.
Come on, that's
because
hard.
The reason I say including film pieces, because synchronized swimming to me
right
supersedes even motivational speaker.
That's so hard. Jeez, I've never really thought about that.
That's
but
real.
I can't even remember some of the stuff. But I know I really enjoyed this season Scarlett Johansson's show. I like the sketch where they
what a compliment
the dog they invented something they were coming in and pitching their invention to this panel at a college, and it was a little hat that where you could read the dog's mind, and it turned out the dog was a Trump supporter, and so it's,
these are all this is really like the best compliment to how forever the show is that the first two are now.
Like, well, Scarlett, that's just my bad memory.
No, but they're great sketches. Who did the Scarlett Johansson show?
What's that?
Who did Scarlett Johansson?
Who did it? What do you mean? It was her.
Right.
She was in the sketch.
Right, but like who? She didn't fucking write it.
No, I don't know
she didn't go, here, you know what's a great joke about me?
No. I like the Jeopardy sketches. With Will Ferrell, those are all.
Who is Turd Ferguson?
What are those called? Which I don't even know what they're called, but
Celebrity Jeopardy.
Celebrity Jeopardy, and I especially love the joke when Sean Connery goes, "I'll take the rapist for $500," and he goes, "That's therapist." Like that, you know. We talk about that joke. My friends and I, like, what a great eureka moment when you realize, oh my God, that word and that sketch, right?
Well, and that word is the rapist.
Right.
Like, that's my first, I was just reading about Louisville basketball. They had, like, hooker parties.
Right.
And they suspended Rick Pitino for 5 ACC games. Like, oh, well, we'll never, no one will have sex with a sex worker again. You really laid the wood to him. Great. And the sentence began, A, new word, vacation of, and I'm like, who the fuck writes, like, how did that get past any editor?
Because
it's a vacation.
Right.
But like, a vacation of duties. And
there you go.
And it was just, but the rapist.
Therapist.
I
called Wally, actually. You know my brother's the cue card guy still on SNL. And I called him up and I said, do you remember the origin of this? And if you don't, can you call Steve Higgins and ask him? And Steve remembered the night. He, and I forget the other writer's name and I apologize, but the night that he...
Gruber?
The two of them, it wasn't Gruber. It wasn't a Higgins boy. It was not a Gruber. It was some other writer and how... The joke had come up earlier in the season in a writing session, and they remembered it when they were working on it. And boy, were they excited to get it out there. But isn't that funny? One joke from years ago that sticks in your head like that. Isn't that amazing?
It's real. It's real, like stand-up comedy. Like a month ago, I was walking the dogs down here, and I'm like, I don't know why. I go, he just looks like a digitally aged missing child. And I went, I just put that away, and like one day that'll fucking come. It's too much a mouthful. I got to figure it out. But it's real like stand-up-y. Like
yeah.
You file that away for later. But thank God. But I bet it wasn't even the guy that thought of it. It was somebody else goes, what about the time you realized therapist means the rapist? Wow. Like there was some sketch. I never wrote it, but it was Realty. And I was like, it was a reality office.
Right.
Not a realty. And then I was so not equipped to be there.
Right, right.
Like nobody teaches you.
Mm-hmm.
And they just go, you're hired. And you go, what do I do? Write sketches. I've never written one before. Just write it. And you got 63 pages. And they're like, whoa. I handed it to Jim Downey at 4 in the morning. I'd been there since 2 in the afternoon. He put his hand out.
I put the sketch in the palm of his hand. He goes, feels a little long, and he handed it back. And first of all, he was right. It's always too long.
Mm-hmm.
Unless Mike Myers wrote it, it's perfect. We shouldn't even be wasting our time arguing over Yiddish words. And like, I didn't know where to hand them in. They go, just give it to Claire. Because everybody's on computers, and they hit a button, and it goes someplace.
Right.
I didn't know. Like, you wrote out jokes, and you would hand it to Dennis Miller, and you knew right away, oh, that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
So I didn't know what the fuck. I didn't know, do I put the character name in the sketch, or do I write Phil Hartman as dad? Do I write dad? And the answer is Phil.
Right, right.
I believe the answer is
you didn't
is
know
Phil.
How to format them.
Nothing.
Right.
But nobody.
But there were script supervisors around, all of those people. Like Claire, who you just mentioned, who's still there, by the way.
Yeah, but this is at 3 o'clock in the morning where you go, oh,
yeah,
my
she's not there
God,
at 3 in the morning.
I could do a Welcome Back Carter and Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
You know.
Once you're faced with the possibilities of that show, it gets tough, which is why I think you go right to the news, because, you know, at least this is going to resonate this week. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But Rob Schneider pointed out to me, and I hate to say anything positive about Rob Schneider, and that was, you know what's wrong with Weekend Update and these things? They're not. It's not news, man.
Right.
It's not fucking news. She went to her sister's fucking wedding. Right. And he was right. It's not news.
Right.
And the Weekend Update, if you're going to bring somebody in, it should be news.
Right, right.
And that's why it was great, like when Norm would do like Charles Kuralt out of nowhere.
Right.
And the Weekend Update is like the go-to. As a comic, you go, fuck it. Here's a chunk of my material.
Yeah.
I can just whittle to 2 minutes.
Right.
Like, dude, I went to England, and I realized, like, oh, this is not news at all. And then I just lost my nerve. The only reason I said that about Schneider was he was mean, nice, mean, nice, mean, nice. And it's like being in, like, an alcoholic home. Whereas, like, Ellen Cleghorn was so fucking scathingly mean when she came down the hallway. I appreciated her consistency. I didn't have to look up to say hi.
Right.
Like, Rob would go, what the fuck do you know, rookie? Why don't you keep your fucking mouth shut? And then the next night, he'd be rubbing my shoulders. How come we're not writing together, man? So I never knew what to do.
Wow. That's crazy.
Spike's Car Radio is the podcast. Hit subscribe now. Do it. Now, top 5 sketches. You mentioned ones all now. I would say synchronized swimming.
That's pretty good. I mean, there, it, top 5 anything is, you know, it's hard to, you know, I could go at that forever, but I can tell you ones that are coming to mind right now that were, you know, Mr. Bill when I was a kid was one of the greatest things that I'd ever seen that had us rolling, you know.
You're young to be down with Mr. Like, that was for, like, people a little.
No, my dad, this is, you know, and maybe Wally's told you about this. My dad used to wake us up and go, you got to watch these shows. And one of those shows was Saturday Night Live.
And you both of his sons worked on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, well, I got Wally the job there. He was getting out of college, and he was looking for a job, and I brought him in to meet Kevin Kay. I don't know if you know Kevin Kay, but no. he runs Spike TV now, and Kevin was running cue cards, and he went to work for Kevin.
Your brother Wally, it needs to be noted, was, in my book, Gasping for Airtime, I really took a lot of time to point out the people that kept me from jumping out of the 17th-story window. The nurse Teresa, Janie, the janitor, Don Pardo, your brother Wally.
Oh, yeah.
Was just kind always. And
he's
you always
a good
had to
man.
Go past him under the bleachers to that stage off to the right. And he was just consistently kind. And he just knew you were going through he'd been there long before you got there.
Yeah, yeah.
He's still there now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget. He goes, hey, when you're doing an update, just look at the cue cards. Don't go back and forth from the camera to the cue cards.
Oh, that's
just stay on the cue cards, and it looks like you're looking into the camera. And he didn't have to say, trust me, because I knew his heart.
Yeah. So I didn't know that. That's a really good tip.
It was an update,
from
actually.
When I get to do Weekend Update.
It was Christopher Walken's Psychic Friends Network.
That's a really good tip. I've always wondered that, actually. Can you believe that? I didn't know
that. You see people like eyes moving around. If you just stay on the card as you're talking to somebody, you're just nobody thinks you're not looking at the other person.
Right, right.
It's when you leave the card and go back to the camera.
Right.
And I needed all the help I could get. That was the first thing I was ever on camera for. Nobody knew who I was, so it didn't get any laughs. Because, like, I know who Christopher Walken is. Is that Dana? Did Mike Myers
Yeah, you
get
were
taller?
In that judging light. We're judging you. We're watching, and we might think you're funny, but we're not going to laugh yet.
We'll judge you after we know who the fuck you are.
Right.
We're thinking back
exactly.
to featuring Don Pardo. Rest in peace.
I love Don Pardo.
How a beautiful man never existed.
Yeah.
I told you when you were here, I said, who's your favorite musical guest ever? And he goes, "Are we're sitting on that little bench right outside 8H. He goes, "Are you kidding me, man? BJ." And I was apoplectic. I go, "Billy Joel?" And he stands up to get coffee. He goes, "Bon Jovi! That motherfucker can sing always." I'm like, "Oh my God." And then like 2 weeks later, he comes in and sings that song. And I'm like crying, like, he's amazing. That's Don so Pardo great. Loves him.
Yeah.
Oh,
what a guy.
Synchronized swimming. I got motivational speaker, Eddie Murphy, James Brown, celebrity hot tub. I love Jim Belushi.
They're all great.
High school chess coach. No, they're not all great.
There are
high
so, school oh my, chess coach. This list could be 100 long.
No, I'm asking just for like five. They can always change. High school chess coach by Jim Belushi.
All right.
Pawn or rook four. Pawn or you just give him the rook.
Cheeseburger, hamburger. I'm going to go way back.
What age the best out of that?
And
era?
Andy Samberg's digital stuff is fantastic.
Yes. Let's talk about this.
That stuff looked, I couldn't believe what he was shooting in 24 hours.
I don't know what, twofold question. And it's Spike's Car Radio is the podcast, and you can listen to Jerry Seinfeld on it.
We got Jeremy Piven coming up and Chris Hardwick, Joel McHale, Russell Peters. That's all I have booked right now.
Thanks. Joel McHale and Chris Hardwick, two guys that if they died, 44 comedians would work.
That's right.
Like you're doing Spy Kids 6. Like, I, you know, mm-hmm. I can use a week in Austin, Texas, Joel.
Yeah, Hardwick is the new Seacrest.
is Joel.
I said, "Come out to Malibu, do a drive." He goes, "Dude, I'm working 7 days a week. Can you please come to my house?" And I was like, "Yeah, I want to see that house, actually. I've heard about it."
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And by the way, both... nice and incredibly talented. I wasn't
sweethearts.
Shitting on
them. And no, Seacrest sweethearts
as well. Mr. Bill, I'm surprised, hit you and your funny
Oh,
bone.
My God. Wally and I would die. We would live for Mr. Bill.
Just because you
got
demolished?
You were like 10 or 11 years old, and yeah, Mr. Bill, something horrible would happen to him. You didn't see that in a kid's cartoon ever, and you would die. It's
that
like
O'Donoghue?
I'm sure what South Park was for a generation.
Is that O'Donoghue, Mr. Bill? It seems up his...
No,
dark.
I thought they brought a guy in to do that. There was I can't remember who it is. I
he
should
brought
know.
In a special.
It was like one of those submission
guy.
But there is a Mr. Bill. He was a one-hit wonder guy. I'm pretty sure.
How long did you write on SNL? Not reception.
I didn't. Well, you know, I went from the receptionist job to Letterman. I went right from there to Dave and upset Lauren. By the way, I remember he was.
Where's the receptionist?
He's it was very confusing. I mean, this is it was a tricky thing because I'm this kind of low self-esteem receptionist guy, and I get this opportunity to write for Letterman, and I get hired. And shortly after, I get a call from my agent at William Morris, who said, "I just took a call from Lorne Michaels, and he told me to tell you, you'll never work for him again." And I said,
"Well, you're a receptionist. How are you even on his
That's
radar?
What I said. I was a receptionist. I'm not even on his radar. I think I had gone to Night Music with David Sanborn after that, actually, and I was a writer's assistant. And they were allowing me to kind of write and be a writer's assistant, which
I bet
was
Dennis
the job.
Was in Lauren's ear.
I don't know if it, you know what? I was. See, here's what was going on. They had kind of put me on a path there, but they had forgotten to tell me, or I was too stupid to realize it. So
no, they forgot to tell.
They forgot to tell
Mike
me.
Mike Myers' office was the floor across.
And what I guess I
years.
Was supposed to do was, and I wrote Lauren a nice note and said, "Thank you for giving me my start in this business. It's, you know, it's been a dream working for you." And maybe that's what triggered the whole thing. Yeah, I was
Saturday
on the path.
Night Live, how can I help
I'm
you?
On the path to nowhere. In Boston. Go ahead, sing it.
We're on a road. Closing song.
No, the path to nowhere.
We're on a path.
I'm going
to
be
nowhere.
A music school dropout, and maybe if I'm lucky, I'll be writing Muzak. I'll be writing elevator music for the Muzak Corporation. Right. Maybe. Or I'm going to be teaching at a school, which is fine if you're a music teacher, but it's not what I had sort of set out to be.
But I don't believe you.
So Mike. And suddenly I'm in this place that I loved, and I could, and I'm around these
right.
people I've
you're
only
saying,
read
Saturday
about.
Saturday Night Live, how can I help you? I don't believe you that was like fulfilling.
A dream. No, beyond fulfilling.
Just to be in the building.
To be in the building and going, oh my God, there goes Al Franken and there's Davis.
What? Who's Emma Thompson?
There's Franken and Davis just walked by me. Oh my God. You know, here's Phil Hartman. Here are all of these people. But then the people who I grew up watching. Even Lorne. There goes Lorne Michaels.
And then when the guests come in.
and the guests.
That's when it gets real.
You know, and, wow. And I remember there's a fire, and there's a fire alarm, and I'm running down a stairway with Steve Martin. Steve Martin! I'm
listening to his albums. In front of you or behind you?
He was in front of me.
Of course.
And I remember saying to him, I go, I know I'm going to be fine because the star never dies. You go, just follow me. And we ran downstairs.
Hairpiece?
I don't know. I don't think so. It didn't matter. But getting back to Lorne.
Yes, sir.
It killed me that I had upset him. That he even knew who I was. And I guess what I heard was I was supposed to go in and quit directly to him at the time. Maybe. And he, you know, they had a plan for me there. I still, to this day, don't know what that plan was or if that was a, you know, load of BS. And I had immediately that following year when I was writing for Letterman, I would come down and I was getting in sketches and still being paid. So I wasn't, clearly I was not dead to the organization. And
Utility infielder.
What's that?
Utility infielder.
I think as good a kind of bump into relationship with Lorne as I could have. I've spoken to him when I see him, and I think we're good. We're not friends.
Do you find that the people that talk Lorne's negative stories about him,
right,
I think are so unfair, I don't think he's got any cutthroat in him.
Okay. Well, now I run a production company, and I run shows, and I star in shows, and I totally understand why he did that. I really do.
To you, the receptionist.
To me, the receptionist.
You were,
yeah.
Hold on. I really got to put a stop here because you were a receptionist.
No, I was a writer's. I'm remembering now. I was on Night Music with David Sanborn, and I was a writer's assistant who was told, you're allowed to write stuff for this show that was, in the beginning at least, music and a little bit of comedy. And I was writing little short films and doing little bumper things with people like Miles Davis and you know, the Red Hot Chili Peppers who were new and the Pixies.
Weird thing.
And
Miles Davis is a name you don't drop 40 minutes in.
No, it was great. Okay.
All right.
So I'm on a trajectory with them. And as a guy who does this stuff now, I totally see I may not pull the guy aside because I wouldn't want him to get a big head, maybe. But I'd keep promoting him and you know, saying, let's develop him as a writer and maybe see where it goes.
Something I'm missing. David Sanborn.
Yes.
Saturday Night Live, receptionist.
Yeah.
I don't know how the two were intersecting.
It was another Broadway video show.
Oh,
that they
okay.
did. It
so
was
he
another
was aware
show
of
Lawrence.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Got it.
Jules
That's
Holland, David Sanborn.
Big piece of the pie chart you left out, buddy.
Sorry. Star Trek of music shows. It was two seasons and out, and it was Hal Wilner.
Who's,
you know Hal.
I do. Who's Captain Pike?
That would be Hal. He was Captain Pike.
Oh, Hal.
And John Head. You remember John Head?
No, maybe. I don't
another
know.
Another friend of Lawrence, and we had this little Sunday night music show.
And he did sketches with. He did something. You filmed something with Miles Davis.
Yeah.
So he had to have been close to death. I'm not being funny, but just pragmatic.
He was not close to death. He was so they would bring in all like five different acts for the week, and then Hal would have them play each other's songs or different songs all together. It was always this eclectic mix of music. You might have, you know, reggae, you might have some African music, you might have punk rock, and then Miles Davis all mixed into one show. And then he would have everybody play together at the end. It was really, really a neat format. So I was taking a camcorder and washing out the color and shooting little 30-second videos for them. And they said, do whatever you want. Who do you want to shoot with this week? And I go, all right, well, Miles Davis. And they said, all right, Marcus Miller, we'll introduce you to Miles. He's coming in this afternoon. 89, somewhere in there.
Way past Kind of Blue, Sketches of Spain. Like, we're just playing for fucking shits and giggles. I mean, if you're Miles.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
No, he knows Hal Wilner. It's a very respectable music show. If you look it up, you'll see everybody.
No, I'm.
You know, lots.
I know it is just by what you said, and I'm going like just you could play so many songs. Well, the first thing I thought of is if they're just in the same meter,
right?
It's when Police and Elvis Costello did Roxanne and Allison at the same time,
yeah,
on Spectacle,
yeah,
and like Washington Detectives and something else, and he did She's the One with Springsteen, and at the same time he did like I don't know, Pump, but. It's amazing.
It's Paul Simon and Yomo Toro and Eric Clapton's there one day with some other guy I've never heard of and Hank Crawford and the oldies. And
what channel was this on?
NBC on Sunday nights.
And how the fuck does that not last?
It was a music show. I don't know if music plays well on TV, but when you look it up, I mean, to be there, it was incredible. You know, it's like SNL, but it was even richer with time with the musicians. You know, Eric Clapton, I remember playing for us for a couple hours one afternoon. Just, you know, when you're just sitting there with a couple other guys in a chair while he's jamming.
What did you shoot?
Have I died?
What did you shoot with Miles Davis?
So I walked in to meet Miles with Marcus Miller. It was just Marcus who was there. He was one of the producers. And he said, look, Miles is going to come in and say hi and just tell him what you want to do, and I'll make sure he does it. And I'm like, cool. So I'm standing there, and Miles Davis walks in with his trumpet. You know, he had that trumpet that was bent up. The horn was bent up at the end. And he goes, Marcus goes, hey, Miles. Miles goes, hey, man. He goes, this is Spike Ferriston. He's a writer's assistant. He wants to shoot something with you. And he goes, cool. And he puts his hand out. But he gives me the black guy handshake, right? And I'm not used to dealing with this. This is my first kind of, you know, I'm already terrified that I'm meeting
Miles
Davis.
Not a lot of brothers
right?
in Fall River, Mass, Lois.
No. When I was at Berklee College of Music in Boston, I went to see him perform the Boston Common because he's, you know, he's fucking Miles Davis.
He's
another guy my dad turned me on to. This is the best. I played trumpet in elementary school because of Miles Davis. So I'm already terrified. And when he does this, I think too much. And I think I'm just going to be myself and shake hands the way I shake hands. So I put my hand out like this, straight. And he goes, what the fuck? Like that. He doesn't say fuck, but he goes, what the fuck? And when he does that, he drops his trumpet. And it hits the hard wood floor and goes, pow! And Marcus leans in and he goes, just leave right now. You should just leave. Don't say anything. Just go. So I leave. I walk out. And I'm white. I'm terrified that I'm going to get fired. That I don't know what's happening. I don't know why I had to leave. I went to go, you know, I remember reaching out trying to pick up that trumpet and his hand, Marcus Miller's hand, just going, no, don't touch it. And then I step out and I'm in my office and I'm, you know, Marcus comes in a minute later and he goes, look, just come back in and pretend nothing happened and shake his hand the way he wants his hand shaken. But pretend nothing happened. This is the first time you're doing it. And I said, all right. And I went in and I did that. And we never discussed it. Never discussed it again after that.
What were the words of pleasantry then?
Nice to meet you.
Did he reintroduce you like he hadn't been?
Yes, he did. Yeah. He said, this is Spike Ferriston, right? So, nice
Miles
to meet
had
you.
Some substances yes. issues in the day.
And he said, what do you want to do? So I took him into a room. We had an empty office in the back by myself. And I had a little tripod and a little camera. And I said, all I want you to do is look in a camera and say, because he had that raspy voice, I've had a sore throat for 33 years. Just that. He goes, just that, just that. And he said it, shot it. I said, thank you. He left.
I bet he really thought it was funny, too.
It was funny. It was great.
But he thought it was funny.
He thought it was funny.
One sentence, I don't know. But he thought that shit was funny the moment he said it.
This it was still a little wonky, but and then what I would do is I would take that and then I would I'd wash the color out in black and white, and then it would freeze at the end, and then the Sunday night with David Sanborn logo would come up and we'd go to commercial. So I shot one of those little bumper films. That was probably the shortest I ever did, but I've had a sore throat for 33 years. And you're right, he did die shortly after that. So
I love Before Kind of Blue. There's two things I heard, and one was, I mean, it's fucking Coltrane and Cannibal Adderley in a room, and I still don't know which saxophone is playing.
Mm-hmm.
And one's a tenor, one's not. Like, Canaver, nope. I've had people go, well, you can tell that's Train, cause, and then they go, well, hold on a minute. It's like, can't you hear me knocking?
Mm-hmm.
They go like, that's Mick Taylor, that's Keith. And then you hear like that weird little acoustic. They go, no, that's definitely Keith. They go, I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
So with Miles Davis on Kind of Blue, he goes, I want you motherfuckers to think just about Purple. Because there was nothing written down except his.
Right.
His stuff was written. Yeah. And the other guys were asked the impossible. His drummer was 18, I think, Tony Williams. And that is, when I look at you, go.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll know when I want you to be done.
Right.
And everything's in a take. And then the other one, I'm on the movie set in the woods of Georgia, and the guy goes, you know that my buddy Michael Dunaway goes, you know that great thing he said during Kind of Blue? And I'm like, oh, fuck. If he's going to tell me the thing I already know, I'm going to be like sad. Like, oh, no, I never heard that. And he goes, if you got to be wrong strong.
Oh, good. Thank you.
There's no mistakes on that fucking album.
Right, right.
Favorite Muppet.
Favorite Muppet?
You're going from that
to favorite Muppet?
Why not?
I don't have a favorite Muppet. I don't.
Well, you have to pick one or you're executed.
All right. Then I guess I'd go with Kermit.
Or I think that's I'm a little bit on the nose. Do we really need
Kermit? I like the two old guys up in the balcony.
Statler and Waldorf. They make me laugh.
Yeah, those guys are great.
That was Franken and Davis, I believe.
Yeah.
I've been really loving Bert lately. I used to think it was Rolf, the piano-playing dog with the big band, because he wasn't used much, so his fur was much more like huggable.
Why are you watching the Muppets?
Because I was a child.
Right. Yeah. But you said lately. I've been really liking
Because lately I've been asking the question to people, and Bert from Bert and Ernie, not Bert Lahr.
Is he a Muppet?
Yeah, Jim Henson.
Right.
There's like these weird memes of him just like looking up and the camera like coming in on his face and like Ernie waking him up and he's like super fucking pissed. Everyone having a party like, hey! And he's just staring straight ahead like miserable.
Right.
And he's really growing on me. So I'm going down with Bert. Oh, I was going to ask, the Lorne stuff. People that have like super negative, they've had, look, if they've had
I would not characterize that as super negative. That, you know, as you went through, this is part of your comedy college, right?
No, I mean people that have said out loud and publicly they're super negative and shit on Lorne Michaels. I've never had any interactions with the guy that were anything other than.
No, they're very nice.
I would definitely submit that again. You have guilt and momentum on your side. How are things going at home? He hired me.
Right, exactly.
Bottom line is, he said, why don't we go with that guy?
Yeah, you can do anything you want to me at that point in my career. I don't care. You brought me in, you know, you hired me, and you know, I just wish I hadn't upset him.
You've met him many times since.
Yeah, we don't discuss it. Kind of like Miles Davis.
Turns out Miles Davis, by the way, handshake Nazi.
Handshake Nazi.
No handshake for you, man.
Yeah.
If you're gonna shake my hand wrong,
I would have been disingenuous.
Wrong, strong.
If I'm trying to be cool like Miles Davis, see that now I wouldn't think twice about it. Now
plus, you got like weird, like skinny hands.
Can you see how neurotic I am? But back then, I'm really neurotic.
It's fucking Miles Davis. It's like the Beatles, right?
Right.
There's one slot above the Beatles for me, and that's Miles Davis.
Wow.
It's Miles fucking Davis. Mm-hmm. He made the cha-cha. Miles Davis, the only reason you know what the trumpet is, and it's not because of old Fat Cheeks Armstrong.
Right.
Maybe you're in the military and the guy that played Reveille gave you a hard on in the fucking sheets, but Miles is kind of the high watermark for the horn section. So Spike's car radio, Jerry Seinfeld episode is up right now. I look forward to listening to that. What is that, 50? How long did you do with him?
45.
40,
yes, somewhere in there.
Oh, because you guys have to go to a Dodger game.
Nah, keep it short. No, this was after the Dodger game. I'm still new to the whole thing. I'm still new to the ins and outs. I'm learning.
People want to hear your voice. Because your talk show was, I told you this too, last time you were here and we did not record. It was really good.
Thank you.
It was like Sam Jones-ish. you don't know who he is because that's what happens when you go to the Audience Network.
Right.
He's just very laconic and easygoing. And he does his research. And what your quote about it, your talk show was, if the receptionist was going to be the guest, that's cool.
Yeah.
Because she's interesting.
Right.
Like when I started the podcast, I had like my uncle on. I had my priest from St. Monica's on.
Right. Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
And just, I've had neighbors on.
Well, you're the show. I'm watching you do your show and enjoying it right now. I just happen to be in it, too.
But I love talking to you, and we're just scratching the surface, and we'll do it again. And it's also the fact, like, you on your podcast, Spike Ferriston, Car Radio, Spike's Car Radio, people are going to tune in eventually and more and more and more because they can rely on you. So I see so many people with podcasts like, fuck, I got to get better guests.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Corolla's got guys on. I don't even know the fuck. Like, his... I don't know who, like Def Frat Guy, and they're famous from there.
Right.
And it just doesn't matter. Like, it's Corolla.
It does not. That's and right. Like, we listen for Adam.
But who the hell is Hardwick's talent booker?
What do you mean?
What do I mean? The return of Jeff Bridges, number 11. Jodie Foster's third appearance. And I'm right. Like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, he's pretty good, right?
I'm trying to get one of my dogs to talk with that magical hat I have. But
isn't
they're all Trump
he the
supporters.
Original podcaster guy?
Adam Carolla is. Look at my man coming in from karate.
Perfect timing.
Best rewrite in the
horse
history.
Dance.
How'd it go, buddy?
Let's see some horse dance.
Great.
Spike.
There he goes. He's got it.
Spike's Car Radio is the podcast, and I'm going to tell you the greatest rewrite of all time off mic that Norm MacDonald did in the writer's room.
All right, let's hear it.
And we'll be afterwards. So people go to podcast1.com or get the really, you should get the Podcast One app. I can't even.
We're on Apple Podcasts too. And I've got to get my own website. So write me if you know.
We just have one for, well, Corey could do it for you.
Well, there you go. Corey's in.
GeoCities. MySpace, man. That's
what's it? MySpace? All right, I'll start there.
All right, my man. Spike, I'm thrilled to see you. And just, I'm happy to meet you and Wally and just good stories. And Lonely Island, we didn't even get to. Maybe the most underrated human being.
You let me know.
On Earth. Jizz in my pants. I threw it on the ground. It's one of the best hip hop songs of all time. My dad's not a cell phone. More Stories Podcast, rate, review, do what you're going to do. Email me morestories3737@gmail.com. Spike, thank you, brother.
All right, man.
Put your name on it.
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.